So I'm so glad you're open to that. You suggested this doing this interview. This is a great idea.
Well, yeah, I think that, you're one of the few people out there that are really talking about modern Taoists.
Yeah.
I think it's very important to keep all this alive.
Oh yeah, and evolve it into what it's going to be for us, especially in the West.
Yeah, and long after we're gone, so that there is some bedrock here for it to really take off and have a foundation, because I really, at least in my mind, Taoism is one of the most important concepts that you could ever grasp or try to grasp to lead a complete life. And to me, I mean, this is all my opinion, and it's just based on my experience. I don't think of it as a religion. I don't think of it as, I'm more of the philosophical Taoist, the Daojia. But I really think that this is so important for people to have these concepts of using nature as the mold or the model to look at, to figure out what's going on with themselves, and to, understand and manifest their own destiny. And I think Taoism is much more important today than it's ever been. Because there's so much out there, there's so much available, and what I'm seeing, at least, is more confusion. And I think Taoism is very, it's simplistic. It gets to the heart of the matter. And, because I get so many people that come here to train with me that are very schooled and very intellectual and very well-versed and, can reiterate verses of Bhagavad Gita, and they're monks and priests and all kinds of things, and they're still searching. And so what I'm finding is, going back to the simplicity of Taoism and its humble origins, back at like in the Zhao dynasty, and really using nature as the model and learning from that and utilizing that as a tool. So I'm so glad that you were open for this, because I really think this is so important for the 21st century.
Yes, I agree with that whole idea of Dao Jia is what people in the West are going to be interested in. They're not interested in becoming priests and joining a lineage and doing lots of complicated rituals and things. But the things, the tools that we get from Taoism, like what you're doing with the healing work, with Qigong, with Tai Chi, with meditation, with Chinese medicine, Feng Shui, all these things that can have real effect on people's day-to-day life. Not to mention when people get sick, which is a lot of times when you see them.
When I see them, and what I'm seeing now is when I'm getting a lot of people, it's complicated, Solala. It's people come to me, and they originally come to me because of, say, cancer, and then they realize that, the cancer is just the top part of the water, and when you start getting to the depths, really, they've been dealing with this depression their entire life, or they've been dealing with their own demons, and we start to work on them, and the cancer goes away. And so what I'm finding is the concepts or the precepts of Taoism can help people to heal, in as much as the manifestation of Chinese medicine, which came out of Taoism. And so, to me, there's not any separation at all. It's really taking what is needed for that person to continue on their journey, or to learn from their trials and tribulations, if you will, and then to be able to step forward into their own destiny, which takes a lot of courage. And then what I do is I just work as the coach for that. I'm not really teaching them anything. I believe that everything is within you, and you just have to peel away the veils and come to your own clarity. But that's sometimes pretty hard. And so people search long and hard for this, and they read books, and they go to classes, and they do different, things to unlock themselves. But it's never really in a consistent manner that constantly leads them into their place of darkness. And, I'm real big on uncovering that place of darkness, like Joseph Campbell, going into the dark of the forest kind of idea. And, the Knights Templar, going into, that which scares you. and, you know, in going into your own internal self, your own kidneys, you know, the depths of the kidneys, the darkness of the kidneys, and finding out what's exactly inside of you. And not being afraid of it, but embracing it. In other words, embracing the subconscious mind so that the subconscious is not foreign to you and you're not battling it on some, you know, ulterior level. But in fact, you're making friends with it, and that in the conscious mind can be as one. You know, kind of like the three become the two become the one.
Mm-hmm.
And then that way, then you can have truly peace. It's not really a meditation. It's not really a practice. To me, practice is your daily life and how you take the concepts of Qigong or Tai Chi or Taoism and use it when there's conflict, whether that be external or internal. That's practice. And that should serve you and strengthen you in your faith, in your belief. And so your practice is your life. It's not really something you do like bowling. You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. really something that really needs to be looked at as everyone that you come across, all your, in Buddhism, they call them treasures. Mm. All the people who cause you difficulty and mm-hmm. press you and stretch you and cause you to think different ways or upset you, they're really your teachers. And so to be able to be willing and at peace enough to accept the lessons that come your way. And that really means that you got to get down into that dark part of where the demons of your mind light basically are, you know, hanging out, and come to understand them and why they're there and why you have, you know, put them into this seclusion rather than bringing them out into the light. You know, that to me is enlightenment, is when you bring those things out. And you start to look at them, and you start to look at them not with fear, but you start to look at them with loving kindness and embrace them. And in that, that's when you start to glean the wisdom of why things were put in your path. And that, to me, really is, you know, the essence of what we're trying to teach here. And whether I'm doing that with someone who's coming in with fibromyalgia or cancer or MS or whatever it is, it's really getting them to be at peace with themselves. Regardless of this is their final journey, or if they have decades of journeys to, you know, embrace, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's not like you win or something. It's just basically enjoying the journey, if that makes sense to you.
Oh, yes, yes. Now I'm curious about how you coach or guide people into these places. What kind of tools you use for this?
It's really interesting because I guess I have an ability and a gift, and where it comes from, I mean, maybe it came from when I passed on, you know, and died and then came back. I always said that for me to understand the spiritual world is easy. For me to understand humans is difficult, you know, because uh-huh. we do such wacky things to each
true,
other and such strife and grief.
Yeah.
But I'm able to see through a lot of the veils and ask the poignant questions that they are afraid to ask. And then I pose that to them, and that becomes their meditation. That becomes they have to discover it. I can't tell them what they need to do, because most people are repulsed by that.
Mm.
They don't want to go there. Nobody wants to be told what to do.
Uh-huh.
But if you discover it yourself through your own epiphany, then it becomes very wise, and it becomes very much something that opens up your world. So I basically, in the Formless Taoism class that we have, everybody has, you know, one-on-one time with me pretty much, and that's it. I will pose the question to you of what you need to go, or where you need to go, or what you need to do, or why do you think this?
Hmm.
And obviously with each person is different, because everybody's coming in with their own experience or their own baggage. So that's how I do it. It's not a, you know, a white tiger meditation or something like that that's going to release the yellow cord and you're to free up these emotions and therefore you're going to be clear.
Yeah.
What I found that it has to be much more specific than that. And it has to be, you know, in medical Qigong, that's a lot of what people do. You know, they start to do these purgations and things like that, and they come away with a much clearer way of seeing. But the thing that is the ball and shackle that's holding them is their own little inner demons that are very personalized. And there's a storyline behind that that they have developed.
Sure.
And we have to get to that. And once we get to that, then they can start to work their way back to peace. And then they can start to work and then fulfill their life's mission and do what they need to do or want to do or you know, or destined to do, if you want to put it that way.
I'm curious about what are the tools that you use that are different than, say, someone going into psychoanalysis or, you know, seeing a counselor about their emotional issues? Because you have an energetic...
Yeah, I'm working with energy psychologists around North America now.
Oh.
And I'm actually teaching them.
Wow.
And so, you know, the psychiatrists and psychologists and things like that are coming into these seminars that I'm doing. And they're very interested, and I'm using Chinese medicine concepts, well, actually Taoist concepts, but I'm changing the language so that they can understand it.
Right, of course.
And because, you know, we have a very esoteric dictionary.
Right.
And most people, it would take them a long time to even understand the dictionary, let alone get to know the terms and what the implications are and the variations between the sects and all those kind of things.
Yeah.
So I'm changing up the language a bit, but I'm using the concepts, the precepts of Taoism.
Oh, and the practice?
In the practice, yes. Mm. And then I'm using that as a series of tools and or ways of postulating questions and methods of even timing when you're interviewing people, using the energy that one can feel.
Mm.
Through all the practice that we're doing, we cultivate an enormous awareness of energy, of people, and the energy that people give off, and their shifts of energy. And I'm teaching people how to understand those shifts and what it means.
Mm.
And then to take that understanding and then to bring it back in the form of a question so that the intellectual mind can grasp it.
Well, that's one of the interesting things about Taoist medicine or Chinese medicine is that they see emotional states as energetic states.
Exactly.
So when you're not just trying to talk about your childhood or you're not trying to do it mentally, actually have tools that you can change the energetics around those things, I would think that would be a much deeper level of healing.
It is. And, you know, they're embracing, you know, things like emotional freedom technique and this tapping and things like that. But what they're coming to me and telling me is that's not always permanent. And
right.
So what I'm trying to educate them on is the mind is the most powerful tool that we have available. And the first thing you must do is learn how to discipline your mind and learn how to work with your mind. And it's kind of like almost like going into a martial art. You know, you have to learn how to discipline the body, but really what you're learning to do is discipline the mind. And then through a series of different exercises or things like that, we can get the person to have discipline in their mind through this repetitive practice that is basically completed. And then you start to believe that you can actually do this. And then you start to change the thinking patterns, kind of like behavioral therapy in a way, but not exactly, because we're using the energy to be our guidelines, not a set of, you know, preordained techniques or, you know, thought patterns, whether it be, you know, Skinner's techniques or whoever's. But we're really using the energy that's coming off and how that person has interpreted that energy.
So what you're doing is it may be a different approach for each person, depending on where their energetics state
is. Yes, it's always customized. And so when I train my students, I'm teaching them how to read that and to work with the person, not with, okay, this is liver, this is anger, this is frustration, this is resentment, all these things. And not so, that's still slotting and being stereotypical.
Yeah.
To take how that person's mind has taken that, let's just say, frustration, and has internalized it and the storylines that are being told in that person's mind by the subconscious because of that. And then what I do is unravel that and then give the person the ability to retell the story in a completely different vein. So that isn't reiterated in the mind, back in the subconscious, so that in fact that person then can go and look at a situation in a completely new way, rather than through the eyes of their liver or their past. and so it's very simple. Again, that's why I love this. It's simple. It's simple, but it's very effective. And if
that's
you learn
good.
The energy, like I always tell people, energy doesn't lie. You know?
Right.
But the mind does.
Right.
Through that energy, that could create enormous amounts of lies to self and to others. But energy doesn't lie.
That's true.
You know? So that's why I'm saying if you really want to get... Because people can tell you all kinds of things in therapy.
Right.
And I actually counsel therapists. I actually work with psychiatrists and psychologists when they have trouble.
They
come to me. So I understand and have been working with these people for over 20 years. And I understand exactly some of the plights that they go through. And so, you know, they can be misled by the person's words or even their body language. But if they learn to read the energy, then in fact they're not going to be misled, and it's a much more effective process, regardless of what other tools you're using.
Well, it's true that people in the West tend to live in their heads quite a bit. And
yeah.
sometimes they can talk a really good game, but it's obvious that they're suffering. But they
yes.
can talk it through their head of why this is happening or blaming someone else or their past or whatever. And that I love this idea that if you go, you approach it from an energetic point,
right.
you go through all those intellectual barriers that they've put up themselves that are fooling themselves even, never mind fooling their therapist.
Right, right. And the idea is, see, I work and I teach people how to support them as they go through that process, because it's interesting, once people no longer are hanging on to those preconceived ideas that were their foundation for them living the life that they have chosen, it is very interesting that they're all at once, they're going, well, now what do I do?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I've lived my last 20, 30 years believing this.
True.
Now that I can actually see that there's another option, I'm scared. I don't know how to approach life.
Yes.
This has been all I've known.
So is this where you bring...
That's where you start to rebuild them. You start
from
the practice of Qigong, Tai Chi, meditation, things like that, so that they have a toolkit of their own. And you start to build them up and give them the self-confidence, not to rely upon me or anybody else, but to give them the ability to transcend.
Yeah, that's great. Then they're not just doing it all in their head.
No, no.
They got to get them out of their head into their body, into their dantians, into their
which
energy.
Is the three treasures, the Jing, the Qi, and the Shen.
Yeah.
You know, and this all starts in, you know, it's all in the blood, you know, because obviously the Qi and the Shen are in the blood.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to access the spirit, you have to go with the blood. But what gets in the way of the spirit or the Shen is all the ways you've manifested your Qi and all your Qi deviations. So when you start to do Qigong, that's what you really should be doing, is cleaning yourself up. You know, like, let me ask you this. How many different kinds of Qi have you heard described?
Many
different ways? You know, Zong Qi?
Many. I mean, China, the weather is a kind of Qi. Everything's Qi.
Everything's Qi.
Yeah, the mind, you could say, is a kind of Qi even.
Yeah, it is. And it's just like, but to me, I always tease people, this is my interpretation. I think Qi is like tofu. It could take on any flavor at once.
Yeah.
You know, it is that ambidextrous. It can be that pliable. And so the idea is to get back to the place where there's not so much judgment. Because as soon as you start to place judgment, you're back into the yin and the yang of it.
Mm-hmm. into the dual, the world of duality, you mean.
Right. Yeah. And that's what causes people the suffering.
Mm.
I was wrong. I was deceived. I was betrayed. I was this. I was that. You've created polarity.
Mm-hmm.
You've created dissension. And when you get to the place of not being so judgmental of your own mind and self and others, that's when you can be at peace.
Mm.
And so getting people to realize how often they pass judgment on others and their ideas and their concepts. I mean, you know, when I first started doing all this and really teaching it, I was trying to, like, convert everybody. You know, I was no different than that person that's, you know, like, the Jehovah's Witness going door to door and trying to convert people. And,
yeah.
You know, because I just thought it was the greatest thing and everyone could benefit from it and everyone yeah. needed this. And
yeah.
I realized that, you know what, I can't do that either.
Mm.
You know, I can't browbeat someone into submission regardless of how intellectual I sound or what good references I have or books or whatever. Uh-huh. It's got to be the person's own mind that wants yeah. to do that.
Yeah. So I like this image that you think of yourself as a coach rather than the master who is bringing the light to the people.
Well, yeah, however you want to phrase it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just getting people to see their own divinity and their own light within themselves.
Mm.
You know, to get out of their own way, if you will.
Uh-huh.
And what that really requires in our world is to clean up our chi. Not to cultivate the same chi over and over that is causing us such dysfunction or, you know, creating an inhospitable place within us.
Mm.
But to do the alchemy that creates a place of openness and light where we can see our and feel our own shen within ourselves.
Yeah. Well, it makes me wonder about, you know, there are a lot of people that do Tai Chi and Qigong and they're still amazingly screwed up.
Yes.
And they're used to running their chi in their certain ways that aren't really helping them. So so you have to teach them how to run their chi in a different way?
I teach them to run their chi in a way that's going to balance them.
Yeah.
Not what's right or wrong or what this teacher said or or whatever. Again, that's judgment.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to do is really just look at that person, read their energy, and say, look, try this. This may be what you need at this particular time. This may not serve you in the future, but right now, this may help you.
Mm-hmm.
And then go about it that way, because I would hope that they would change the next time I see them, if this practice is successful for them.
Yeah.
And so they're going to be in a different place, so they're going to need a different kind of Qigong. Not the same one.
Yes. Yes.
Because that's stasis.
Yeah.
So to me, it's ever evolving, and that's why I called it formless Taoism. There's no form to it. There's no script. There's no 12-step program. There's no, you know, initiation. There's no sect. There's no. It's about the individual cultivation of development for the person. That's all.
Yeah. So, but it doesn't, in your many years of training and personal experiences in life, some of which have been pretty extreme,
yeah.
allows you to be able to look at them and see, even though they may be doing meditation, Qigong, Tai Chi or something, why it's not working for them.
Exactly. And, you know, that old definition of insanity that Einstein put forth, you know what I mean? Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
No, that's very applicable to a lot of Tai Chi and Qigong and energy workers.
Mm. Plus, Tai Chi especially and Qigong also is very famous for people think they're going to learn something in a weekend and they're going to just change their life immediately. And they find out, oh, well, actually, you have to practice this for months before you really learn it and practice it for years before you master it. And really, it's a lifelong practice. And there's a huge attrition rate of I think 3/4 of people that start these things don't stick with it.
I'd agree with that. And here's the thing. And again, it's like it's this acquisition. Like if I do this, then I get this.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's erroneous thinking.
Mm.
I don't approach life that way. I don't think of it as just a trade-off.
Mm.
If I do this, then I get this. I'm like, regardless of what happens, I have, and no pun here, the inner strength and the peace to be able to handle what happens.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what's going to happen in the future. I don't want to know. You know? I just know that I'll, whatever it is, I'll take it on the chin, and I'll deal with it, and I'll make the best that I can with it.
Yeah.
Rather than being afraid of what's coming around the corner and preparing for this or for that, that's not being in the moment. That's not, you know, that's not practicing.
True. True.
Mindfulness. That's not true. Practicing, you know, being in the center. That's not practicing being in your Tai Chi pole.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is that you have, through your practice, cultivated enough peace, you have cultivated enough confidence in yourself, and you have cultivated enough that you can handle yourself in life, regardless of what happens. And then you have the mental strength, and you're working on your physical strength and your spiritual strength, the you know, the three treasures, every day, and everything that you do, and everybody that you meet, and every circumstance that comes up, and that is your practice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you look at it that way, rather than I'm going to go and I'm going to meditate 45 minutes before I start my day.
Yeah,
that's wonderful, but to me, that the practice doesn't end there.
Or feel really bad that you didn't make it any certain day or something.
Right, right. Or you know, that, in fact, I got to do it so long, or I got to complete this set, or, you know, those kind of different things. That's all judgment built into that.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to get people away from so much of this judgment. We're very judgmental here.
Sure.
You know, and we're always looking, you know, for, you know, the weak spot or the hole in the story or something like that, to make something more of it and to, you know, to tear it apart, break it down, and rather than just embracing.
Well, I'm sure you've seen this in many of your clients and patients, where people feel like they're evolving and they're not so judgmental about other people and they really feel they're getting somewhere, but they're still incredibly judgmental about themselves.
Yes.
And towards themselves.
Yes. And I think that's the worst kind of, it's insidious, because a lot of these people aren't even aware of how often they're criticizing themselves in their mind. And it's almost like they're creating these computer programs that run in the background, subconscious,
uh-huh.
and they're constantly fortifying these, they're supplementing them with chi, basically, every time, you know, they slam their shin into the coffee table and they say, "Oh, you stupid," you know, and they're talking to themselves.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Or, you know, that something goes wrong and they say, "Well, that's my luck," or, you know, and they're constantly enforcing this programming rather than being openly aware of what's going on, embracing it, and just letting it go, not having that judgment attached to it. And it just causes so much of the chi stasis that I see in the pathology that comes in here.
Mm. Well, I think there's a difference between being self-critical and self-responsible.
Correct.
A lot of people, they don't want to be responsible for their own spiritual, energetic, emotional state. They'd rather blame someone else or have a guru or a teacher or a partner or something that takes up the slack. And I noticed that was something that my teacher, Nihua Qing, talked about early on, about to really be on a spiritual path, you need to be self-responsible for your own energetic, emotional state.
Right.
And that is a tough one.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, this is something that I thought about, you know, I was trying to think about how to define nature, because really Taoism is about nature.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, the nature of energy is just to create. And sometimes that means that in order to create something, something has to be destroyed.
Right, yeah. The plants grow, then they die, and then they regrow.
Right, exactly. It's the cycles that we're always looking about in Chinese medicine.
Yeah.
But the energy is the nature of energy is just to create things. Now, the mind is what gives it the flavor.
Mm.
You can create total chaos within yourself, or you can create total peace.
Mm-hmm.
You make that choice, you know, but it's the responsibility of the person and assuming that responsibility and not pointing the finger. You know, I'm thinking of Bruce Lee, you know, pointing at the moon.
Oh, right.
Okay. But, you know, it's to take that responsibility and say, you know what, I have a choice here. I have a choice here. Yeah. I can blame so-and-so, or I can blame my teacher, yeah, or so-and-so didn't teach me right, or whatever. Or I can say, hey, you know what? Regardless, I learned something.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's how not to do something.
That could be a valuable learning right there.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I had a Muay Thai teacher that basically was so brutal with his students, like everybody just walked away crippled.
Oof.
He was a great teacher. I mean, he had excellent technique. And I learned from him,
mm-hmm,
how not to be a teacher.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Wow. Well, I love this idea of formless Taoism.
Well, thank you. Thank you. You know, it was one of those things. I knew that perhaps a lot of people would not embrace it, but you know, it's really nice solo law when you get to a place in your life when you're not doing things for other people, but you're just doing it for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And you're doing it with peace, and you're doing it with compassion, and you know, leaving this behind, because this is really my lineage.
Mm-hmm.
This is, and we're all working on our lineage.
Mm.
So I ask people, what are you leaving behind?
Mm.
Are you leaving something behind that's going to, you know, foster compassion and peace and love and perhaps a different way of thinking,
mm-hmm,
that gets people out of their suffering, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's your artwork. Maybe that's your photography.
Sure.
Thinking of Ansel Adams. You know what I mean?
Sure.
There's so many ways to do it. And this is just mine.
And you never know where it's going to go.
Right or wrong. I'm just saying it's just mine.
And you never know where it's going to go. I mean, did Lao Tzu sit down and write those few brief characters thinking, oh, 2,500 years from now, there'll be so many translations of this, you won't believe. So you do never know. And my first Qigong teacher, when we were doing teacher training, was like, don't be too attached to your students doing really well. A lot of them are going to, usually the ones that are the most excited in class are the least likely to stick with it.
Yeah.
And what you're doing is planting a seed, and then that's your responsibility, and give them good guidance.
Right.
And then it's up to them, and we can't be attached to what they do with it. Even though, like you, you know, I was healed of a long-term illness with Qigong, and of course I want everybody to do it because it's so great.
Sure.
It can help anybody.
Yeah.
You know, it may not, I always say, I don't guarantee this will cure your cancer, but I can guarantee it will change your life.
Yeah.
Only if you do it.
Exactly.
If you just read books about it, you know, and watch DVDs, it's just not going to do it.
No, you know, that's one thing that I think in this modern technological age, you have to experience the energy of the teacher.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
You really do, and a DVD doesn't do it. I don't think a Skype session does it.
Uh-huh.
I really believe that you got to stand in their Wei Qi field,
mm-hmm,
and soak it all in.
And they can stand in yours and give you feedback, yes, on that too, feedback and reflection.
Exactly, and that to me is the real teaching takes place. You know, and there's just like, you know, there's all kinds of chi machines out there now.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're,
yeah,
supposed to generate chi.
Yeah.
Like that. And I just, well.
Yeah.
I've felt a couple of them at some of the naturopathic conferences. And
yeah.
I just personally don't like the way they feel.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's,
I don't think
there's
it's
never
chi.
Going to be anything like human touch.
Yeah.
A person touching another person. And that is the most healing thing on this planet. And, you know, when we start getting away from that, we start getting cold and, you know, removed from our patients or our friends or whatever it is,
mm-hmm,
that's when disease starts.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Or it exacerbates the disease. But in the same thing with the teacher, I think you have to really stand in the presence of the teacher and with the teacher for a little while and to get the sense of what he's trying to teach you, because I've always found, like, with some of my teachers, they teach on multitudes of levels.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people look at just the Jing presence, you know, the physical movements of how they're doing things.
Yeah.
But a good teacher teaches on three levels. and they teach on the Jing level, they teach on the Qi level, but they're also, they're pouring their soul into you, they're pouring your Shen into you. They're, it is a transmission of many, many, many teachers behind him.
Yeah.
Or her.
Yeah, yeah.
And that Shen is coming through, and that Qi is coming through, and so different people pick up on different things.
Mm-hmm.
And so a really good teacher teaches on a multitude of levels, and I think you have to be in their presence to really grasp all that.
Yeah, I love that. Three levels. I mean, as you know, a lot of probably most Qigong teachers and practitioners, but especially teachers in this country, don't know anything about Taoism at all, don't have any idea where this comes from, what's the philosophical, spiritual basis of it all, and they're just teaching the movements and maybe some of the Qi.
Right.
And
it's so hollow.
Yeah,
it's so hollow.
I don't think people get as much
so
out of
much
it.
More.
Yeah.
And the true power of it is not being demonstrated.
Mm.
And that to me is, now that I'm working with, you know, social workers and psychologists and things like that, a lot of them are starting to invoke these different breathing techniques. They have taken Qigong workshops, they've taken Tai Chi workshops. They're starting to implement this into their patient load. But until they understand the essence of Qi and their Shen, it's still not going to be as effective.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, introducing to them the concepts of Taoism, the concepts of how we, you know, as Taoists look at energy and how that energy creates things in that person's, you know, Wei Qi, and how they carry themselves and how they think about themselves and all of that.
Yeah.
All of that is available for the therapist to be able to then help that person with if they learn to read the Qi.
Yeah.
You know? And to me, this is something that really needs to be addressed. Because, you know, I've known people, and, you know, I've worked with a psychotherapist for 17 years, and you can sit in talk therapy for years and years and years.
Oh, yeah.
Rehashing in the same stories, going over the same things.
Right.
Rehashing the same emotions and never really moving out of that stasis. Because you're not working with the Qi aspect. You're working with the Jing form of it.
Mm-hmm.
How you've used words to define it. And a lot of times there's not even a connection inside anymore with that story that you've told yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And to get through or past that, you have to start working on the Qi level. And what I found is, you know, when working with the therapist, when people get stuck, the therapist send them to me, I work on their Qi, then they're ready to go and talk about something different. Shift.
Mm.
And this is how they then make progress. But a lot of people that aren't working on the energy level are going to stay in that same place.
Sure. Forever.
Does that make sense to you?
Oh, total sense. Yes. I wish we had a clone of you out here. And there's a number of people I would love to send to you out here in the West Coast. I mean, you know, when we started the NQA 15 years ago, we were totally convinced that Qigong was going to sweep the nation.
Yeah.
And yoga certainly has. But Qigong has not still. And Taoism, I mean, sometimes I explain to people why Taoism should be as well known as Buddhism. But I find that people who are drawn to Taoism tend to be highly individuated, non-joiner types. And they don't want to be part of a group like a Buddhist Sangha where you just join and then you're there with your group.
Yeah.
And it's but for those of us that are really drawn to Taoism, it can be a little lonely sometimes of not having a big group of Taoists around us.
That's true.
I mean, look at this conference in Oakland, how small it is. That's just high quality teachers there. That you know, that should be tons of people at that thing.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Well, I think that, you know, perhaps the way people have interpreted the term Taoist may be some of the things that are inhibiting people from really embracing it.
Oh. Now, how's that?
Well, you know, it's something if they've seen it, it sounds very esoteric.
Yeah.
You know? And when they read, and they go to Barnes & Noble or something, they pick up the Tao Te Ching, they read it, and I don't think they really understand what it's saying.
It's true.
And I don't think they dig deep enough in their own, you know, in like their own intrinsic thoughts, or they don't seek out a teacher enough to explain it to them, or to take a class, or to go that one step. Whereas Buddhism has enough teachers out there and people doing interpretations that it sounds very moderate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Dalai Lama's all over the news all the time.
Yeah.
He's talking to psychiatrists and psychologists, which is what gave me the idea to start approaching this group of people.
Mm.
And, you know, and I've been kind of accepted into their group as one of the teachers, but I teach Taoist concepts. I can relate to their Buddhist readings, because a lot of these therapists have read a lot of, you know, the various Buddhist books that are out there, and concepts and things, and a lot of them have read the Tao Te Ching, but what I found is when I go to conferences and teach the Tao Te Ching, where I'll take a piece of it and try to explain it, they never heard that before.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they really didn't get the gist of it.
Yeah.
So the power of it was missing. And I think that's a lot of what's happening, and just my personal opinion, with Taoism, is that the power of it is missing because of the esoteric language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was just reading something on a blog the other day saying, well, yoga and things coming from India, people spoke English very well. They went out and they taught it to other people, and China is much more insular society historically, and they haven't made a big push to try to make it available to people in the West. Taoists in China, their goal is not to spread Taoism in the West. There's a few teachers that have come here.
Sure.
But it is hard to understand, and the Tao Te Ching is the perfect example that the Tao Te Ching is full of practices.
Yeah.
Meditation, Qigong, Shen practices. And most people think, well, it's this little book about philosophy and leading a natural life.
Yeah.
Because they don't know how to read it.
No, they don't. And, you know, and here's the thing. I mean, I'm one of these people that I like to take words and then break them down.
Mm.
And when you say, what is a natural life? I don't think a lot of people even know what that is.
No, they think it's you live on a farm or something.
Yeah.
You don't realize.
Yeah, exactly. You're like some hippie or something. That's very minimalistically, you know?
Yeah, that you can lead a full, engaged life in a big city and still live a natural lifestyle.
Very much so. Very much so. And you don't have to dress a certain way, or, you know, never cut your hair, or wear a hat that has
only eat organic grass-fed beef or something. It's true that people don't know.
You don't have to do any of that. And
to be natural.
The idea is it supersedes all of that. That is so trivial.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's what a lot of people think that they have to do, or they have to take some kind of oath or something.
Yeah, right.
That is going to be very conflictive of their, you know, computer programming job that they have in the big city.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what I'm trying to debunk, is that is something we really need for today. You know, you need to sometimes, in order to create balance, just to go and take a walk into the park or into the woods or whatever, and just feel, listen, be. And you know what? The energies that pervade you are the same energies that created you.
Mm-hmm.
And you can start to understand the Tao just by being in the Tao, and the being in the Tao is being in nature.
But people can also do that in their own living rooms.
They can do that.
They can go within and find that space.
Their own little, you know, deck outside.
Yeah.
They can do it anywhere because it's available to them.
Yeah, Tao is everywhere.
Exactly.
It's in the cities as well as the country. And these concepts from Tao Te Ching about Wu Wei, water course Wei, being the Pu, the Angkor block, all those things are, that's what I think when I think of living a natural lifestyle. Those are the concepts to use.
Right.
For some people living in a city, they can live a very healthy lifestyle and be fine. Other people can't.
Right.
So what's natural? Well, what's natural for one person maybe isn't for another person.
Exactly. And that's why, you know, this whole concept of being formless, of finding what works for you,
mm-hmm.
but not being afraid of finding out what works for you, is so important. You know, people like to fit in, and they like to be accepted, and they like to, you know, have people agree with them. And sometimes there is such a energy. And I like to think of Einstein, right? He was a weird dude.
Right.
You know, but if he wasn't true to his own nature, who knows? Maybe we wouldn't have his discoveries today.
Yeah, good. Very likely not. If
you
had tried to fit in with the other guys.
You know? Or Merton, or any of these other people that were kind of looked at in their day as being kind of like, well, you know, dude, you're a little odd, but you got some interesting things to say.
Yeah.
You know, it takes a certain amount of courage and a certain amount of belief in oneself and a certain center to be able to walk that way.
That's true.
And to follow your path or your destiny. And that's what I mean. It's going to be that celebration of uniqueness. And that's why it has to be formless, because nobody is going to walk on my path.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't expect you to. You know, I don't want you to. If you do, I'm going to kick you off.
Choose your own path, dude.
Yeah, really. Yours is over there. It's part of territory.
I mean, these are kind of concepts that I think for the most biggest part of the population, it's not even part of their reality at all. Their reality is they go to work, they come home, they watch TV, and TV is their reality.
Yeah.
And to me, TV is one of the worst things, one of the most insidious, toxic things that people can do to themselves is get hooked.
It's so chi-robbing and mind-numbing.
Yeah, and Shen-disturbing.
Oh, my God.
Nowadays.
It's a reiteration of, you know, to me, it's like... sensationalism in every form of in fashion,
mm-hmm.
rather than the simplicity of what is really life is about. I mean, the most cherished memories are usually of something so simple. You know, that first kiss, or you know, mm-hmm. the first time that someone applauded when you sang, or little things like that that you said, "Wow, it's okay just to be me."
Yeah.
And someone else accepted me for that. That's really cool. So, you know, that kind of thinking, rather than what everybody else is thinking or doing or whatever, it takes a certain amount of courage to walk that way.
Definitely. But it's good to have a coach help you do that. I think
and I think there's a lot of good coaches out there, you mm-hmm. know. It's just that there's not too many Taoist coaches.
It's true. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for spending some time with us, and thank you for doing the wonderful coaching and wonderful healing that I know you do back there in Pennsylvania.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know, it's always great to talk with you, and it's always a lot of fun to hook up with you. And,
yeah.
You know, you always have such insights on things, too. you know, in... You know, the magazine, I'm so glad you're continuing to do that, and I want to see it grow and flourish, and, you know, I want to see everybody have that under their arm when they're, you know, going to the bus station or...
Wouldn't that be nice?
They're at the airport or something like that to, you know, foster these concepts.
Well, now people can download it to their iPad. I mean, I'm moving it to the whole digital world as well, because that's where a lot of people live now.
Yeah.
And I want to be able to reach those people also.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, you got to, again, you got to match the 21st century. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And talk about 21st century things and the trappings of the 21st century. Because, my goodness, there's so much. We have so much, you know. We have so much available to us anymore.
Yeah, it used to be you have to walk over to the next mountain range to study with this other teacher.
Yeah.
And hang out outside their temple through the snow for about 3 or 4 weeks before they even let you in.
You really had to want it.
Yeah, and then if you wanted something else, you had to go to another mountain. And it's true that it's all available to us, but it's all available, and so people don't take it as seriously in some ways too, probably.
Right.
And so,
well, here's the interesting thing. I know that people go out on, well, the internet is you know, a blessing and a curse.
Right.
And the people go out and they can read a lot of Taoism, mm-hmm, out on the internet. There's a lot out there.
Yeah.
But what I find is applying it to their lives is where it misses a step.
Yes.
And that's the thing. It's not good unless it's applicable.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's where I think we need to move in Taoism in the future. Is it making applicable to that, you know, 21-year-old or that 18-year-old or, you know, that person that is searching to find some inner peace or to find, you know, tranquility or to find out how they can cultivate themselves because, you know, they don't want to cultivate themselves the way their friends are,
mm-hmm,
you know, with video games and things like that.
Yeah.
They want to do something different. Their mind works different, and they're looking for something to allow them to cultivate that.
Yeah.
And those are the people that I hope we can reach.
Yeah, that's why one of the reasons I'm going into the digital world as much as I am, because there are a lot of people that are very comfortable with that.
I think so, too. And I think that that's the way you're going to... I mean, the speed of which these youngsters, like I have them in my martial arts school,
yeah,
the speed of which they can use their iPhones and collect information...
I know, it's really scary.
It blows my mind.
Yeah.
I mean, and they can find stuff and look stuff up and have a synopsis in a couple minutes.
Right.
Of anything.
Yeah.
And pictures and diagrams.
That's
and
true.
And movies.
Videos, and yes.
I mean, they're so good at searching things anymore and finding things.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, applying that inwardly, it's kind of like there's a shutoff there.
Yeah, yeah. That's what you're saying, the blessing and the curse. It's,
yeah,
so easy to get information now that people don't value it the way people did.
No. I mean, I think if you gave, you know, like the example you gave, if you hiked 3 days through snow up a mountain and, you know, almost lost your fingers and stuff,
right,
you'd be very interested in what that monk had to say.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and really, really willing to apply yourself.
Well, exactly. And on the way back, you'd have 3 days of solitude to think about what he said.
True, true.
You wouldn't have, you know, the next distraction of, you know, email coming in or, you know, looking this up on the internet. You'd have three,
yeah,
days of solitude to introspect and to think.
It's true. You couldn't instantly go to the next teacher and then the next teacher and then the next.
Exactly. And I think that's where we're missing the boat here, too, is, and that's what I kind of do with my class, is I force them, literally, to go out and spend some time alone with the things that I'm presenting to them and make it,
great,
apply to themselves.
Great.
You know, because if you do that and say, you know, I want you to do this at home, most people, the phone rings.
Yeah.
They get an incoming text. Something happens and it breaks them and they're going, oh, I'll do it later. Later never comes.
Yeah. Yeah, and they don't.
When they come here, they can kind of like give themselves that time.
Mm-hmm.
And we have our first group of graduates coming up. It's a 2-year course.
Oh.
And we have our first groups of graduates, and some of them are ministers, and some of them are therapists, and some. I mean, it's very diverse. I have a,
nice,
medical doctor. I mean, it's just.
Wow.
And it's so interesting to see the changes in the person.
Mm.
These people have changed their lives and the way they think.
Yeah.
And now they're going to take that into their own individual, you know, life, whatever,
yeah,
it be, how they're raising their children or how they're applying this at work,
yeah,
or their own personal lives. They're changing, and they're going to change others around them by their way change.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And that to me is really cool. Now, this next one that's coming up, we're going to do something unprecedented. We're actually going to be doing the Formless Taoism course on Skype and online.
Uh-huh.
so people can tune in all across the world if they want to, but 1 weekend a month on a Saturday and Sunday. And in that way, they don't have to travel here except for like a couple times, you know, in the 2 years.
Okay.
Because I want them to experience coming together.
Yeah.
Other people's Weichi. I don't want them to miss that. But, you know, if they live in, you know, Portland, Oregon.
Right.
They can tune in.
Yeah.
And then do the exercises with us. And hear, you know, what I have to say and the questions that the students rise up and ask. And they can participate in class digitally.
So how do people get connected with this?
Well, they just go to formlessdaoism.com.
Okay.
And then they can hook into my website, read a little bit about it. And we're going to be starting class in April.
Yeah, that was my next question. When does it begin?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
So I think, again, like you, it's a way to reach the public in a modern age.
Yeah.
With some very foundational, you know, Taoist concepts that, you know, for me, will never go out of style.
Yeah. Yeah. Still there?
Yes, yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought for a minute you'd dropped off.
No.
Okay, okay. Well, I think I have enough material here.
Okay.
Yeah, and what I'll do is over the next week I will transcribe it and then edit it, and then I'll send you a copy beforehand so you can take a look, and if there's anything you want to that you want to clarify or something, you have a chance to do that before it goes to the printer.
Okay. Hey, and what I'm also going to do, since this may, I mean, we talked about a lot of different things, but I'll send you a little blurb that I started to write about Formless Taoism, actually for your magazine.
Oh, great.
And you can pick and choose what you want out of it.
Okay.
And that will help you a little bit into maybe weaving this together.
Yeah, great. You can do a little intro from that. And that all sounds really good.
All right.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it. You're like the Taoist icon out there.
Well, it was really fun for me too. And you know, interviews are a lot of work.
Really, think of you as like a brother. You know that?
Oh yeah, yeah.
I mean, I really do. I know we're separated by a lot of distance, but you know, it's like when I see you, it's like, you know, I just seen you last week.
Yeah. There's
never that lag time.
No, it is. It is very nice. I feel very warm towards you, and always happy to see you. And we always seem to have a good time.
We do.
And you know, and I really appreciate the level of mastery that you have attained through your life, and to see how humble you are about it. Because I meet people, you know, all the time who are, you know, they learn a few things, and suddenly they're calling themselves master this and master that, and. Yeah.
I have met those people too.
And yeah.
I don't think life's about mastery. I think it's about enjoying it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
So, you know, that term always kind of makes me chuckle to myself a little bit. And you know, but that's fine if people want to call themselves that. But to me, I'm like the eternal student. And I realize, you know, I have so much more to grow into. And that's exciting for me.
Yes.
It really is. And so I don't look at it as limiting. I look at it as very exciting.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when I run into somebody wanting to learn something about Taoism, I get all excited. And I tell them I'm still as passionately excited about this as when I discovered it, you know, 23, 24 years ago.
Yeah.
Still, there's so much more to learn.
Oh, there is. There is.